really kind of struck a chord with me, really hit home in a number of different ways. And he very clearly pointed out how much how much change has taken place in the past generation or so, you know, the past 4 or 5 decades, that how much has changed. I removed the cable television from my house about a year ago now. I didn't do it because of the programming that was coming into my home, which should have been the real reason I did it, but I did it because I felt I could no longer afford it. was paying over $100 a month for cable TV and internet service and watching one or two channels out of 100 and some odd, and just decided, you know, I can get the same garbage for free off the airwaves. So and why bother doing that? So I did it for selfish reasons, but I realize now that it's probably one of the best things I've done in many, many years, was to remove that part of the world from my home. And I also, you know, my lesson tonight's not about the evils of TV or anything like that either. Even though, you know, there are a lot of reasons why we shouldn't have televisions and why we shouldn't even have them to watch DVDs and tapes and things like that, because I think if you have a television and a DVD player and a video player, even though there's a lot of good stuff out there to watch, you know, Christian things and stuff like that, so-called Christian things anyways, the temptation to watch other things is just too great, and that's the way I feel. That's just my opinion. But, you know, yet I still hang on to my TV set and DVD players and all that stuff too, so but that's enough about that. Television has changed, you know, as of June. It's all digital signals now coming over the airwaves, and the old stations, you know, where you had just one channel, you had channel 12 and you had channel 5 and you had channel 6. Now you've got 12.1, 12.2, 12.3, and, you know, there's like 4 broadcasts off of the local TV station, channel 12, and channel 6, you know, channel 5 has 3. Some of the PBS stations have up to 4. So just off of the airwaves with a real nice antenna, you know, I can get, you know, 35 or 40 different programs, you know, of which half of them are the same anyways, because, you know, Lansing has channel 6 and Flint has, or Bay City, Midland, whatever, has channel 5, and they're the same network. So you get the same shows, whatever, off of those. But anyways, be that as it may, you have all these different selections of channels that come across the airwaves now with digital television or digital broadcast signals. And the one station that is available, comes out of Detroit, the old channel 7, they have 3 sub-channels, you know, 7.1, 7.2, 7.3. 7.2 is a broadcasts retro TV network, if you will. And those are the television shows that were broadcast back in the 60s and mid-60s, probably up through, I'm guessing, 70s, maybe early 80s. Stuff like, you know, Adam 12. I don't know if anybody ever remembers that show, but Emergency, you know, with firemen, paramedics, and Wagon Train in black and white, you know, the Alfred Hitchcock Hour. a lot of those shows were on when I was little, let's say. You know, I wasn't probably, well, in the 60s, I was, you know, 9, 10, 11 years old, and so on. Kojak is one of the shows that's on. Leave It to Beaver, when he was just a little tyke, you know. That's the programming that's on there. And as I watched these programs, you know, I kind of chuckled at some of the things that you see happen in these programs now. You know, if they were to take that same show and have it on television now, it would be vastly different, you know, than what it was back then. For example, Emergency was a program that was a weekly series about the fire department in California, Los Angeles in particular, when the paramedic program, if you will, was brand new. That was the only place that had it for quite a long time. It was actually invented there. And I think we all know what a paramedic is. He's a trained emergency technician. He's really not a doctor or anything like that, but he can administer drugs and splints and shock you if you need it, you know, if your heart quits and that kind of stuff, insert airways, lots of things. And back when that show first came on, or before it came on, it was the attitude of the medical community was, you know, like, what? Let someone not a doctor actually treat an injured person in the field? You know, are you nuts, you know, to let someone do that? And today it's a common occurrence. You know, it's the norm for that. If you don't have paramedics, you know, in your community, things are probably, emergency services is just not as good, if you will, is in areas where you do have them. The logic of, if you will, the logic of having trained people in the field to administer, you know, this extended, if you will, first aid, other than just, you know, bundle them up and get them back to the hospital as fast as you can. The logic of how having people do that in the field could save lives, you know, kind of was accepted by the medical field, but it had to, you know, it was proven. You know, but that's a change, I guess you will, over time, that now it's just a logical thing, you know. Another more subtle example of how things have changed since that show, since Emergency was filmed. I was watching the other day as the firemen jumped into their rescue squad, they called it. That was that one-ton truck that had all their gear in it that they went out to do all their rescues and so on. They'd scramble into that thing, and the guy would hand them a note, and zoom, off they'd go. No seat belts, you know, no shoulder belts, no airbags, you know, chrome knobs all over the inside of the cab, you know. You know, you would never see that on a TV show today. I mean, even the chase scenes that they filmed today, you know, the cop jumps in a car and the first thing he does is slam a seatbelt in place before he takes off, you know. Or fasten your seatbelt, this is going to be, you know, they talk about it. They didn't even have seatbelts in their cars back then. So there's another change that's taken place that over time. And it's just something that, you know, nowadays you would never see that on a TV program, or, you know, that whole message of buckle your seatbelt is out there. As Brother Gunnels pointed out in his devotion, there are many, many changes in other places, specifically the way religion is under attack throughout the world. It's not just, you know, Baptists or conservatives or anything. It's religions all over the world are under attack right now. And I listened to Brother Gunnels and I wondered, how much have we personally changed in the past 40 to 50 years with respect to what we believe or what we practice, primarily what we practice? How much have we compromised our position on God? How much have we given in to the pressure of the world and said to ourselves, that's not that important. I'm not going to fight that battle. I'm going to let that one slide. You know, I'm just going to let it go. Or just plain, you know, don't say anything. Just forget about it. It's not, you know. With each new generation, a little more ground is lost because we let things slide in our life, in our personal lives. You know, we say, I'm just not going to go there. It's just not worth. I don't want my kid to be singled out. You know, that's a big part of it. I mean, that's what happened to me in particular. Was, well, you know, they're under a lot of pressure nowadays. You know, it's really not. You know, I don't want them to be this, or I don't want them to be that, or I don't want them to be picked on or anything like that. And so, we lose ground with respect to our stance in the world and showing the world, you know, how how Christians or how God-fearing people should live. And as parents, we as parents sometimes didn't like something we were perhaps forced to do by our God-fearing parents and vowed to not make the same mistakes, you know, that they made with us. I'm not going to make those same mistakes with my kids, you know. And I know, I got to believe that practically everybody's had that thought in their head, you know. I didn't like my mom doing that, or I didn't like my dad doing that, and I'm not going to make my kids do that when I have kids. Then I thought, well, anyways, usually those kinds of things just erode. It's a slow eroding process, you know, where we lose this stuff, and we a lot of times don't even know what's happening to us, you know. But we change over time, little by little, you know, step by step. And then I thought, if we could just simply stay the same as we are right now today, not give up any more ground, how long would it be before we were thought of as a sect or a cult like the Amish or some of these other super, you know, conservative people that live completely differently in the world today than, I mean, than other people do, than other Christians do? How long would it be before we would stick out in the world, you know, and be, it'd be obvious to people that we were different? The rate things are changing, you know, I'm wondering, would it be 10 years or 15 years or maybe even as many as 20 years? And we think about how quickly things have changed in just the last 10 years, you know. A lot of differences between now and 10 years ago. And just look at the last 10 months, you know, since we've had a new president. How rapidly things in this country have changed and how rapidly people are embracing, you know, throwing off of conservatism and religion and so on and so forth. If you turn to Exodus 20 in verse 8, God tells us to remember many things. And starting in Exodus 20 verse 8, this is where the Ten Commandments are. It says, remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. Well, actually, that's part of that commandment. 6 days shalt thou labor and do all thy work, but the seventh day is the Sabbath of the Lord thy God. In it thou shalt not do any work, thou nor thy son, nor thy daughter, thy manservant, nor thy maidservant, nor thy cattle, nor thy stranger that is within thy gates. For in 6 days the Lord made heaven and earth, the sea, and all that is in them is, and all that in them is, and rested the seventh day. Wherefore the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and hallowed it. And that was one of the points Brother Gunnels brought up, was all the things that we do on Sunday now, you know, besides go to church. And I've done it myself, you know. Didn't even give it a thought a lot of times. Go out to a restaurant to get something to eat, stop at the grocery store to buy groceries on the way home, or stop at the deli to buy something from the deli to eat for dinner that day. You know, run to the hardware to pick up something, or go to Kmart or Walmart, or go to Menards or Home Depot to pick up supplies so you can start working on something on Monday morning, you know, that kind of thing. And we don't even, that's one of those little subtle things, you know, that kind of creeps into our life, that's a big change. That's a huge change. And I wonder also, too, that, you know, this is a commandment. This isn't just some, this is one of the, you know, the Ten Commandments. This is not some interpretation or some prophet, you know, saying, you know, where God's explaining, if you do this, I'll do that kind of a thing. This is a commandment to remember the Sabbath and to keep it holy. And, you know, in recent years, I felt some pride in myself, foolishly, now I realize, for refusing to go deer hunting on Sunday. You know, I hunt with my brother-in-law, Gary Boyd, and my brother comes up from Georgia. Been doing that for the last 10 or 12 years or so. And through that course of time, you know, the weekend has come and gone where weekends have come and gone where, you know, hunting season is involving a Sunday or the time that we're there. You know, maybe it's opening days on Friday and we're up there through Monday or Tuesday the following week or something like that. But I've tried to make it a point to not hunt on Sunday, and I've also tried to make it a point to drive home, you know, Saturday night and be here for the Sunday services and then return to hunting, you know, on Monday. And I thought, well, I'm really doing it. I really got a testimony out there, you know, that I won't hunt on Sunday. In fact, I'll drive, you know, 2.5 hours to get back home to go to church and so on and so forth. But, yeah, it might look good, but, you know, when you really start thinking about the whole thing, I can say that my experience has been that practically the whole time I was sitting here in services, my mind was not here, you know. Not completely, anyways, and not thinking about the right things, not worshiping God, not dwelling on, you know, being here and partaking in the, you know, I was here and I partook in the services, but I wasn't part of the service, if you understand what I mean. My mind was on the wrong things. I was thinking about how long it would take to get back to hunting, you know. What time in the morning am I going to have to get up? If I drive back Monday morning, I could be, you know, I got to get up at 4. How tired am I, you know? How soon will services be over and I get home? And if I go to bed right away and get up at 4 o'clock, I can be there by 6:30 before daylight, you know. You're calculating all these things in your head. And Brother Gordon's up here, or Brother Titus, whoever it happened to be, he's preaching their heart out, and you're not hearing a word of it, you know, because you're worried about getting back to hunting. You might as well not even bother coming back, you know, if that's where your brain is. And so, yeah, you know, I remembered the Sabbath. But did I keep it holy? You know, I don't think so. This year, the ultimate challenge, opening days on Sunday the 15th. November the 15th is a Sunday. And I say that jokingly, the ultimate challenge. How many of us guys that hunt are going to be here Sunday morning when services start? Or sitting out in a, are we going to be sitting here on a pew, or are we going to be sitting in a deer blind someplace? And how many of us hunters will try to get in a couple of hours hunting before opening day, or before we have to come to church, you know? Well, you know, church don't start till 10. I could go hunt until 9 o'clock. I could still make it, you know. Or how many of us are going to be sitting here, you know, concentrating on our packing list, you know, to get ready to make sure we're ready to go, we haven't forgot something. How many of us are going to dress up in jeans and camouflage Sunday night and come to church have our car all loaded so that, you know, when the last amen's said, we can shoot out the door and get on the road to get up there so we'll be there in plenty of time for Monday morning to hunt if we are here. How many hunters will forsake the assembling of themselves at our own church and opt to attend at another church somewhere that's like ours, you know, but we're not here. We're not here. Our body's not whole when we're not here. We're crippling our own body when we're not here. And how many of us are going to make that decision? Yeah, we remember the Sabbath day. You know, yeah, I went to church. You know, so what if it was in wherever, Timbuktu? You know, they're just like we are. That church is the same as us. But you're not part. You're a member of this body, not that one. You know, wherever you went. So that, just remember that commandment has two parts to it, you know. It says remember and keep it holy. And a lot of us do the remembering part, and we remember the Sabbath, but we don't keep it holy. You know, and I'm not saying, you know, I'm free from guilt in this. You know, I'm just as bad or as lax as anyone else. And then there's this part of the commandment, verse 10. It says, but the Sabbath day, but the seventh day is the Sabbath of the Lord thy God. In it thou shalt do no work, thou shalt not, in it thou shalt not do any work, thou nor thy son, nor thy daughter, thy manservant, thy maidservants, thy cattle, okay? Nor thy stranger that is within the gates. Okay? This seems pretty plain to me. God even commanded his people to not cook on Sunday. There's other places where Moses is explaining about gathering the manna when they were wandering in the wilderness. There isn't going to be any manna on Sunday. You know? So you got to gather enough on Saturday to get you through Sunday. Well, Sabbath day. The seventh day. Because on the Sabbath day, God's not going to provide you any manna to go out and gather. You're not to gather it on that day. And so we should, you know, he told his people, he says, make enough food for the Sabbath day, but don't make it on the Sabbath day. Make it the day before. And when was the last time that we kept all day Sunday holy? All day Sunday holy, thinking about God, dwelling on him, worshiping him. And I personally can't ever remember doing that in my life. Really concentrating and dwelling on the Lord all day on Sunday. Usually what I do is I leave here, you know, stand around and chat a little bit, and then I leave. I go home. Sometimes I go home. I go home now because I can't afford to go eat out anywhere. But when I could, you know, sometimes you go to the restaurant, you go to McDonald's or go get a pizza or go to a sit-down restaurant, order dinner and eat and meet with other family members to go out and eat and stuff like that. And then we'd, you fix dinner, you eat, you do something. You eat your food or someone else's food or whatever, and you go to a restaurant or go to the grocery store, deli, and buy something to eat and take it home. Then watch a television program or two, then take a nap. It's usually all about me once I've fulfilled my obligation. And that's the way a lot of us think of it. Well, I'm obligated to go to church Sunday morning. Do I want to go to church or do I have to go to church? You know, I fulfill my obligation of attending both Sunday school and the preaching service. I really had a red letter day because I came to both Sunday school and the preaching service this morning. I really did it today, you know. And then back again Sunday night for evening services. After I, you know, wipe the nap out of my eyes and have a cup of coffee and you know, come to again. And, you know, get myself in the car and drag myself over here for evening services for an hour. And then bolt out of here again, you know, Sunday night. Go home and so I can get there to catch the first, you know, the opening scenes of Extreme Makeover Home Edition or something, you know, like that. I mean, that's about how crazy we are, you know, about doing stuff. I mean, that's me anyways. And I don't think I'm alone in this, but that's the way we get, you know. It becomes routine, you know. We don't really stop and dwell on the Lord and think about, you know, this is his day. You know, Sunday is his day. That's the whole day is his day, not just 2 hours in the morning and an hour in the afternoon or hour and a half or whatever we spend, you know. It's like, you know, I'm shameful about choir, you know. Oh man, we gotta come over here at 5 o'clock to practice. That's cutting in a whole hour and a half of my day, my afternoon. I just got home. You know, that's the way we get. I mean, it's terrible. For me, it is anyway. I'm ashamed of it. It's really not funny. You know, we really should, you know, think about what we're doing. I mean, this is important stuff. And all this melancholy, you know, attitude about, it doesn't matter, you know, just nibbles away. You know, we lose ground all the time. And I can remember a time when, just like Brother Gunnell said, nothing was open on Sunday. You couldn't even get a carton of milk or a bottle of milk anywhere. I mean, it was, you didn't have it by Saturday night. You didn't have it till Monday. That's just the way it was, you know. And all the stores were closed everywhere. You couldn't buy gas. I can even remember people that during the week that would avoid businesses. You know, I mean, I'm not talking on Sunday anymore. This is normal business days, all right? But people would avoid businesses and boycott them if they were open on Sunday, because they were open on Sunday. When was the last time any of us thought, I'm not shopping there because they're open on Sunday? I mean, you can't hardly find a store that's closed on Sunday anymore, you know. But that's because we've made it profitable for them, just like Brother Gunnell said. I can remember people rushing to get their grass cut on Saturday or Friday or some day of the week, you know, because it just wasn't right to mow the lawn on Sunday. Okay? Now Sunday's become the designated grass-cutting day for the world, you know. In particular, Sunday morning, it seems. Everybody gets out there and starts cutting the grass Sunday morning. And why not? You know, there's nothing else happening on Sunday morning to interfere with it anymore. All the gas stations are open. All the repair shops are open. All the garden stores are open. You know, so if I have a problem with, I need some fertilizer, or I need this, or I need that, I can run down Menards and get it. And, you know, just kind of blow off going to church. I don't need to go to church anymore on Sunday morning. It's sad, you know, the way the world has become and the way we have ourselves kind of slid along with it, you know. Maybe not to the same degree, but we've lost a lot of ground in the last 50, 40 years. A lot of ground. Deuteronomy 32 and verse 7 says, "Remember the days of old. Consider the years of many generations. Ask thy father, and he will show thee, thy elders, and they will tell thee." And this is directed at everyone, you know. I mean, there's almost always somebody around older than you that you could ask, what was it like back then? What did you do back then? You know, and they can tell you, you know. And this verse tells us, remember the days, remember the old days, remember how it was. Remember how many generations ago it was like that, or like a certain way. Remember what happened. Remember where you came from. Young folks, seek the advice of your father and your parents, the older folks in your church family. They do know a few things, and they do understand how you feel. I didn't come out this way. You know, I grew up. I was a young person at one time myself. So was everyone else. Okay? And we faced the same problems, the same basic problems, the same basic concerns that you are facing right now, at whatever age you are. If you're a young lady, your mother was faced with the same problems that you're faced with right now as a teenager or young adult. Your mother or your father, if you're whoever you are, were at the same place that you're at right now, some point in their life. And don't think that it's all different now, because it's not. The only thing different now is technology. Technology's different. But the same basic problems that you struggle with as a young person or a young adult are the same basic problems your parents struggled with and their parents struggled with and every person from the beginning of time has struggled with. Wanting to be accepted by your peers, taking responsibility for your actions, having good self-esteem, popularity, relationships, you name it, we struggled with it too. It's no different. It's the same problem. It's just a different time. Maybe the circumstances as far as technology and those things are different, but the problem is still the same. So ask your parents. I've never understood why my girls would say, I have got to go get some advice from my friends about such and such. I'm going like, your friends? Why would you want to talk to your friends about advice on a subject that they know nothing about? How many of us go and talk to, that'd be like me going and talking to Charlie, for instance. Charlie, you know, I want to buy some insurance, life insurance. Wouldn't I be smarter to talk to Larry, who sells the stuff and is intimately familiar with it and has worked in that industry for the last 30, 40 years? I mean, if you didn't have a Larry to go talk to, then Charlie might be a good choice. But but if I wanted to talk about trucks, Chevy trucks in particular, I'd go talk to Charlie because he used to build it. Okay? He probably knows something about it. I talked to Dwayne and Kevin about electrical, you know. I talked to Wayne about telephones. I mean, you go talk to the people that know about the stuff, not some guy off the street that, what do you know about telephones? Nothing. Well, let me ask your opinion then, you know. That's about what it's like almost. And I never understood why you wouldn't want to get the best advice you could on, you know, dealing with the relationships and all these things that we struggled with when we were young. And why do you think the advice in the Bible about living and relationships and the world and service to God are still relevant in these times? I mean, this book was written centuries ago. Yet, the information in it is still applicable today. It makes perfect sense. I mean, and yet I just don't get it, why people want to go read some self-help book, you know, written by somebody who may not know what he's talking about. Anyway, I'll get off of that subject. In Nehemiah 4 and 14, it says, "And I looked and rose up and said unto the nobles and to the rulers and to the rest of the people, be not ye afraid of them. Remember the Lord, which is great and terrible, remember the Lord, which is great and terrible, and fight for your brethren, your sons and your daughters, your wives and your houses." This verse reminds us to fight for our church family as well as our blood family against the world. Remember, we have a God on our side, and He is all-powerful. We shouldn't despair. We shouldn't fear the world. Don't give in to the pressures they exert on you. Stand your ground. That's what we need to do, is stand our ground. We shouldn't, if we don't, it's just going to nibble away. You know, we're going to lose. If you don't stand your ground, you're losing it. If you're not advancing, you're retreating. And if you can at least stand still, you know, you're not going to lose anything. That's the important part. Not to lose any more. Isaiah 46 and 9 says, this is, again, you know, my favorite chunk of the Bible in here because it's talking about God. "Remember the former things of old, for I am God and there is none else. I am God and there is none like me. clearly this verse tells us how to remember, tells us to remember who and what God is like. We need only to look into the past, examine what he has done, how wonderfully in control he is of the world stage. If we don't believe in an omnipotent God, then we have nothing. We're just going through the motions, really. I mean, if you don't believe that God's omnipotent. Revelation 2:5 says, "Remember, therefore, from whence thou art fallen, and repent, and do the first works, or else I will come unto thee quickly, and will remove thy candlestick out of his place, except thou repent." This remembrance comes with a warning. So remember or else. Do you ever think about when you were first saved? Do you remember how you wanted to serve God? You had a real passion for it, you know? You couldn't get enough of the Lord. You wanted to learn all you could learn as fast as you could learn it. And then over time, that seems to wane for some reason. We need to get that passion back. You know, we need to get that desire back in our lives and to really, really get out there and really start, you know, living for the Lord. Back then when we were first saved, we stood our ground. You know, we didn't back down from people. We told them, we witnessed to them, we did a lot of things, you know, that we were passionate about. And we need to remember those days. That's what this verse is saying to us. Remember that. Remember what it was like. This verse also says, do like you did then. You know, do the first works. That's what we're supposed to be about. And again, a television program that I was watching the other evening was Star Trek, The Next Generation. I was up, couldn't sleep. It was 1:30 in the morning, you know, channel, whatever it was, 46 point something or other. Star Trek, Next Generation was on. And I generally like Star Trek, but this particular program really offended me. It was a direct attack on what I believe. There was a little conversation in there between Captain Jean-Luc Picard and some socialist scientist type character that was in the show. And what had happened, just want to try to make this real fast because I'm running out of time. If you're not a Trekkie, you know, I'll try to explain it. They have what they call a prime directive, which is not to interfere in the development of any race or creatures or anything that they come across. And in this particular case, they had violated that prime directive, and these individuals or humanoids had thought of them as gods because they were so far advanced, so much more far advanced than they were. And the captain and this scientist guy that had been on this particular planet studying these people were on the Starship Enterprise having this conversation about how this humanoid race looked upon them as gods, and that he told the starship captain that the captain must give these people some commandments to guide them. He reasoned that their interference with the race of the primitive people would certainly re-spark their belief in a supreme being, and as certainly it would develop into a religion, and without commandments they would decay into ignorance and chaos. And the captain was livid. He would do no such thing. He would not give these people commandments to live by. He would not encourage them to develop a religion, to believe in a supreme being. He said he would not help them return because they had already cast off their belief in a supreme being and were going into logic, you know, as the process for which they would govern themselves or develop. And he would not encourage them to return to their belief in a supreme being and be ignorant. And I thought, wow, you know, how in your face could that be? And that program was on, what, 10, 15, 20 years ago it was on television? Star Trek Next Generation? That's when it was on television. That's 20 years ago. The propaganda against religion that is being shoved out through the airwaves, and I mean, we're under attack, literally. There was so much wrong with that, with that statement. In just that little snippet, you were told that evolution was the way things develop. Religion makes you stupid. Religion causes society to decay. There is no God. Logic and reason are the keys to improving society, and so on. That was all in that little conversation. If you paid attention to it, which most of us just don't, you know, we just, oh yeah, it's no big deal, you know. It's just a TV show, it's nothing to worry about. It's all fake. But you have to, if you're watching something like that, especially with your children, you gotta stop and explain, hey, this is not the way it is. You know, if you don't counteract that stuff, you lose a little more ground, you know. Make no mistake, you know, we're under siege. We're literally under, and siege is an interesting word, and I chose it on purpose because, you know, we're barricaded in a fort, more or less. And the enemy's out there and got us cut off from just about everything, you know. And they're just waiting for us to starve to death in the castle so they can come in. That's what siege is about, you know. And that's just about where we are in the world today. Revelation 3:3 says, "Remember therefore how thou hast received and heard, and hold fast and repent. If therefore thou shalt not watch, I will come as a thief, and thou shalt not know what hour I will come upon thee." This verse tells us to remember how we came to know what we believe to be the truth. Remember what you were taught. Hold on to that. And if you slip, repent. Okay? That means stop. Repent means stop what you're doing. Don't wait to be caught. Stop because it's wrong. Stop because it's sin. Turn from it. Whatever it is, okay, in your life. And then Corinthians 6:14-18 it tells us to live a separated life. You know, we're all very familiar with that. And those verses tell us, you know, verse 14, it says, Be not unequally yoked together with unbelievers, for what fellowship hath righteousness with unrighteousness, and so on and so forth. What communion hath light with darkness? We are supposed to be different than the norm. We're not supposed to look like the world. We're not supposed to act like the world. We should stand out from everyone else. People should be able to look at us and see that we're different. Just like when you look at an Amish person, I'm not saying we have to go to that extreme, but when you look at an Amish person, you know right away, you know, who they are and what they believe. There's no question, you know. We should be odd looking and acting in the world today. But a lot of times you can't tell. You know, sometimes you have to go up to people and ask them, you know, are you a Christian? Well, yeah, as a matter of fact, I am, you know. It's like that old joke about the kid that went to college, you know. His mother was real worried about that people would pick on him because he was such a church-going, religious young man. And he come home after the first month of being in college. He says, well, how'd it go? He says, oh, it was fine. He says, no one ever guessed. You know, that's kind of the way a lot of us are. I'm that way, you know. So we should be recognizable in the world today, that we are different, and that we don't do what everybody else does, and that we don't talk like everyone else does, and we don't dress like everyone else does, and we don't go shopping on Sunday, and we don't go to the restaurants on Sunday, and we don't, You know, we don't do those things. Those are the old ways, and we should return to them. At least not get any worse than we are. You know, we need to remember where we were when God found us. Think about where we would be if He hadn't. Remember how we used to be when we were first saved, and be like that again. Hold the line. That's what we need to be doing, is hold the line. I'm reminded of that song. That's, I think it's 345 in our book. It's Hold the Fort. Verse 2 says, "See the mighty host advancing, Satan leading on. Mighty men around us falling, courage almost gone." In verse 4 it says, "Fierce and long the battle rages, but our help is near. Onward comes our great commander." Cheer, my comrades, cheer. And the chorus is, "Hold the fort, for I'm coming." Jesus signals still. Wave the answer back to heaven. By that grace, we will.